21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney, the sky ain't blue, it's kind of yellow, you know it's true.
Well, outside's in, inside out, as above, so below. God, we got all kinds of stuff going on here on 21st Century Radio. I'm the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, and our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Cordner, and Noah Dankner is with us tonight. We fired the other person. Actually, we didn't even fire him. I never met him. So things just change. Gosh, if you've ever taken a look at the Great Seal of the United States, especially the side that has the pyramid and the eye and the triangle, you have got to, well, you should have been shocked, because what in the world's a pyramid doing on the back of the $1 bill? How many pyramids do we have in America? Well, actually, we do have pyramids in America, but I didn't know that back there in 1968. And you take a look at some of the symbols in the reverse of the Great Seal, the eye in the triangle, or the single eye. You have an eagle that sometimes doesn't look like an eagle, and it could be a phoenix, but it could be something else, but you can't tell for sure. And then you've got, of course, the pyramid. And we were talking about that. Now, the pyramid that I first saw back there in 67, 68, looked like to me the Great Pyramid, because that's the one on the back of the dollar bill. But if I had had my research together at that time, like the time that I was sitting with Jimi Hendrix, and would have had that research, because we were talking about this pyramid and the eye and the triangle and all this other stuff, which we could not understand why in the world America had these things. But let's now get into with Gary Giannitti, because he's taught me a good deal in these particular areas. I never in my life ever thought that you could have a seal and have all kinds of hundreds or thousands of other little symbols inside of it that you couldn't see, or the same kind of seals on and symbols on flags and other documents. And what it does is it corroborates that they are, in fact, are what they are. Isn't that one of the reasons why all of these things were put on these flags and other symbols?
Correct. So information would never get lost, and the belief is that these relics or stone building sites, they're actually documents themselves.
So again, we're going back to the Nubian. Tell us a little about the Nubian pyramids, please.
Okay. My very good close friend, Bradbury Court Lindahl, who does research at the Access Monday and line sites and the study of all these ancient people connected to who founded America, he and I were working on a project where we were studying together this Kirkwall scroll, the most important scroll of Masonic history in Scotland, said to be ancient, and it's like a map that shows the River Nile and who knows, maybe America. It's still never been fully understood, and there's arms of Freemasonry on there, you know, the coats of arms. But on this map, we started studying some of the people associated and what they were doing it with a lot of this history. And we've linked some adventurers that had gone out to Africa. And one of them was named James Bruce, a very, very famous Freemason, super scholar. And he spent a dozen years in Africa studying the Nile Basin and all the way out to Ethiopia and in Sudan. He was there, and also another famous person named Drummond. And the Drummonds, you have to remember, this adventure, these families were early on married to the St. Clair, Sinclairs, and to the Stuarts, and to the Scots. They were famous poets, big time. Very important families connected to the ancient banking system, and the list goes on. Wonderful family, you know. It's rich history that it's slowly dying off. Their family got a lot of problems. There's few people studying the history anymore, which is pretty sad.
Yeah.
But this one Drummond did work where he brought back some of the – he built a pyramid identical below the Royal Castle in Stirling. It's called the Star Pyramid or the Drummond Pyramid. It is an identical pyramid that he documented, as well as one that this Bruce did in Sudan, the Nubian pyramids, which are these very narrow, thin shallow, not so tall pyramids. There's a whole group of them out there, and this is what the this is really what the Great Seal history seal, the obverse, represents. And you also see this in Rome. There's these famous pyramid also there, done on the identical style and design, the Pyramid of Cestius. And so this Drummond, if you ever go and study this pyramid, remember how I told you we see all this writing and stuff on the coins and seals?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, if you look really close and ever get good images of that pyramid, the Drummond Star Pyramid, you will see that on the blocks of stone, you'll have this art throughout all around the outside of the blocks of the stone, too. I mean, and it's full-scale size, and it's the throne of right, and it's that's what it says. And so basically these men were tracking back most likely where the origins of where we come from. And that's what this whole history, tracing back where they come from and their identity, and that's what the history was about. And that's why we have that design. And that's what these men were trying to convey.
Were you also... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just tracing back the lost tribes all the way back to Ethiopia.
Now, you also note... I guess... maybe I should put this... let's go back to the Kirkwall scroll. Mm-hmm. Because that... I could not see it actually on the website, but I did read about it. Why is this important, especially to Freemasonry?
It's, what's the best way to say it? Well, it's supposed to be a scroll that has these ancient values, and it's supposed to be the oldest and most important surviving relic for Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. That's what it's supposed to be. And it shows a map, and it may be a map relating to the New World, which no one can prove. But then it is a map also supposedly that is supposed to be linking back to most likely where all this history originates. Mm-hmm. Freemasonry, our sovereignty, where we come from, to the lost tribes.
Now, you also put some emphasis on not just Scott, Robert Scott, but others that he was involved with were map creators.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, this is really key, because how did they know how to get from over there to here, to North America, or what we would call today America anyway? It seems that there was considerable knowledge within the esoteric societies, and perhaps certainly this aspect of Freemasonry that showed how to get here. And it has something to do, I think I'm going to forget the name of the people, but the stars, using the stars to navigate.
Yeah, and the Kirkwall scroll map is a reference with what this Bruce did, mm-hmm. probably, with his traveling back to the ancient world. Mm-hmm. And all of Scott's families, even Robert, his grandfather, there are Gordons associated in their art group. I mean, these guys were all cartographers. They were all map makers. And it was an important aspect.
I'll say.
It was very important, especially with mapping everything for commerce and trade. And the Scott family, Robert's great-grandfather, commissioned the most important maps in the history of Scotland. And then we see Robert Scott actually making them and his students making them. Same with the map of Washington, D.C. His two top students who are under him, working for him, with their names on it, made the engravings of the map of Washington, D.C., even though it was done by Pierre L'Enfant. Mm-hmm. But they were the ones that did the actual engravings.
That's really interesting. That's an area that I've spent a lot of time in, but that one of the things that's always puzzled me, because I know that you've raised questions about it too, but when people start translating the Great Seal's obverse, the front side with the eagle side, they take a look. Everyone has, when I get into discussions on other stations and things like that, they say that Bob, those 32 feathers down there in the eagle, And the first thing I would say and still do is I don't believe that there's, in my understanding of the history of the Great Seal, that they actually determined that there were 32 or 33 or whatever kind of feathers. I don't even remember how many feathers that had down there. It wasn't important to those that were creating it, from my understanding.
You have to remember this. The dollar bill has to do with Scottish Rite Mason that was found in the 1800s. It has nothing to do with the original Great Seal of the United States, because we know about Theodore Roosevelt and Wallace behind doing that. Yeah, he probably added because he was a 32nd degree Mason. So that Scottish Rite Masonry that they added into, which it has nothing to do with the ancient and original history of these Scottish families and what they did. Because when you see the original Great Seals, the whole series of them, there is no way you can mistake them as being eagles. Robert did an encyclopedia, and in there he has a great bald eagle. If he wanted to do a flawless bald eagle on any seal, he could have done it any time he wanted with his artists. And he didn't, because the intention was to do a phoenix, the symbol of a new nation, a rebirth. And a lot of that symbolism is really, there's some very ancient, it's a book, one of the oldest books in Scotland, has this symbolism of animals with the bird in there. And he actually did some of these designs on these buttons that I'm studying that match this identical design that he would have been privy to with his education, having access to this art. And, like I said, he did several different designs, and there's no question if he wanted it to look like an eagle, he was 100 times more capable and competent of making it look like an eagle. So when you see the old feathers and then the numbers, you don't actually see all those numbers, exact numbers being 13, 13, 13. The only time you see a 13 ever is when you see the arch or on the stripes on the shield, mm-hmm. and the stars, and that's about it.
So there has been a kind of a mix-up between two different Freemasonries.
Correct. One that never existed, and the original Scotland Freemasonry origins. So you have Scottish Rite that comes from France that came to America in the 1830s, 20s or 30s, which has nothing to do with any of this history. Or Freemasonry, because it didn't exist. They didn't exist.
Well, this
but they adopted it. They adopted their own. But then again, it's an infusion when we see the dollar bill. It's an infusion of Scottish Rite history, if that's what the intention was with Wallace, who is a documented 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason.
Well, this especially in regards to, I wish we had time to go into all the other people. There are so many names. That's one of the hardest things I had in looking at this. There are thousands of names you got here.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
And they're also
hundreds.
And they're all, many of them, these are famous. They're powerful. They're not just like me. These are really something. And for them all to come and work together, it was obviously a great desire somewhere for, especially in regards with England, or the United States, the United Kingdom, one of the reasons I believe needed Robert Scott did not want this known as to who he was and what he was doing, because he would have had a conflict of interest.
Exactly. Family back home, his mm-hmm. father's estate before he went back there, which he did after the revolution for a short time, a couple of years.
And so
there would have been consequences, but it's been learned that his teacher, the most famous line engraver in the history of Scotland, Sir Robert Strange, he was already involved. They were already back in business with the British, working as engravers for the coins and money. Mm-hmm. And so was James Trenchard. He disappeared and went over there.
Yeah. Well, he's always been a mysterious guy to me.
He's a mysterious guy. And there's another one, a guy named Perkins, who was with their group later on that went overseas too, one of these big inventors of the steel engraving plates. And so the whole point is that, when I told you about Scott, why he was so mysterious. Well, once I learned who his father was and having the original documents, his birth, I got his original birth, family records, the original copies of his father, grandfather. We know his great-grandfather came to America, was exiled with for religious stuff, and had 125 servants. Think of that. Cool. 125 servants.
Yeah, that's more
when these
than
guys
I got.
Bought some clothes, when they wore an outfit of clothes, the type of clothes they wore would be like wearing $100,000 for a piece of clothes. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of money and power these families had. Mm-hmm. Huge. Huge.
Now, you mentioned, again, the buttons, and I want to go back to the George Washington spy button, because this is super important. Tell us about this particular button. It's a
good friend of mine, Robert Silverstein at George Washington Inaugural Buttons.com. He and I have been working for a while, where I found him through my research of finding similar art of Robert Scott's on these different buttons that I started with my research in-depth searches. Mm-hmm. And Robert is the authority in the United States on George Washington inaugural buttons, and has available and provided me, my good friend here, the most important buttons ever known to survive in the United States history. He's got the best collection. And and this is the thing. You can find Robert Scott coins today, silver dollar, worth $10 million, the most valuable coin in American history and world history, one of the most valuable coins. But people don't care about the art and what's on there. Scott was subtle with the hidden art on the coins, but on the buttons, it was a free-for-all. He put all the ancient history and everything, and there is stuff we're finding that is, it's a roadmap that scholars will enjoy to study. And now I can truly say, with the help of Robert, is that these inaugural buttons and several other Eagle Phoenix buttons that are surviving now, they link and show a history going back to the ancient world, and these buttons are more historically valuable than any and all United States coins ever made by Scott and his guys. Guaranteed 1,000 times over, and they're devalued, and people don't even know Scott made them. So the one that we had put on your website is one that he actually, a gentleman, had given to him so that it could be preserved for education, this information, for we can study. And here you are seeing the Ishtar, the eight-pointed Ishtar. And it has maker's marks of Robert Scott. And the reason why this one's so special is that we actually find this giant maker's mark of Pierre-Eugène de Simitier, one of the other designers and associates and great seal maker, one in the group of seal makers with Scott. Mm-hmm. And it's just an amazing find. It is so rare because so few things of him even exist, because he died in 1784 from a finger cut infection. That's how the man died. And there's a whole series.
We got another break coming up here. We better take it right now. And when we do come back, I'm going to list a couple of things that I certainly want to touch on. Besides what you want to do, is there is fascinating stuff. And the Bacon's Vault treasure, I'd like to talk about Oak Island, and the possibility of there being codes in the Declaration of Independence. All of this material you have in your research in this particular area. And I think it's a real important, especially in regards to what we're discussing tonight with our guest, Gary Giannetti. You can check out our growing YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/21st Century Radio. And yes, indeed, every show that we do, you can listen to for free. And I understand we're probably one of the last in this country to keep up that tradition. And that's too bad, because I know a lot of people can't afford to pay all those fees to listen to shows. But ours are free, friends. Years of them. One of these days we'll have all 30 years up there.
Hello, I'm Michael Bastien, co-author of Iroquois Supernatural, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Thank you so much for this opportunity. and we hope you enjoy all the work that we're doing for the people.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest, Gary Giannetti. Gary, I think I cut you short on the spy button.
Sure.
We need to go back to that because the question I wanted to ask is, I just wonder why the number 8 or Isis or whatever female deity that could be attached to, I wonder why George Washington, well, actually, he didn't choose that, did he? It would have been Robert Scott.
It would have been Scott, and there was a button found in Fredericksburg next to his lodge that was from his son's property. And that's the one that has the Peregrine cap and the all-seeing eye, the first one ever seen before that represents the ancient, these royal Jacobite bloodlines and to their Merovingian French lines and as well as their ancient English lines, Scottish lines too. Washington, I'm sure he had input on it. There's no question of a doubt. But this symbolizes a lot of their Freemasonry belief with the whole Dog Star history.
Oh yes, the doggy.
The Dog Star history, and that's why he chose that, because that's a part of the fundamental main core history of Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm. But not necessarily Freemasonry of the 18th century.
No, but more so, I think, a lot to do with their bloodlines and these ancient families and their beliefs, and that's where a lot of this is kind of mixed in between the two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the royal families followed this, and they've kept this history going back to ancient times. You know, they didn't just follow Catholicism as well as, like, Robert Scott's grandfather had the Mithra symbolism following that ancient religion, you know, and a lot of this connects to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Paris, the name of the city of Paris, where that Scottish Rite organization in America was established.
Yeah, you have some connection to that.
Yeah, my actual name is Parisi, and I'm a descendant of these ancient governor of Paris who served under the kings and was sent to Paris to control and guard the gateway to the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a history and a name that represents the ancient magi and the families that brought the actual knowledge and mathematics and sciences and what founded America today. Kind of weird, right?
Sure. By the way, we had a caller. We wanted to know if George Calvert, Lord Baltimore, was a Freemason. I don't believe so. He was Roman Catholic. There are many Roman Catholics that are Freemasons, but back in that time, I don't think he was. What were you going to say?
I was just talking to a descendant of the Calverts the other day on email, and you know what?
What?
We just found out that the oldest surviving seal of all the colonies in all of America is Lord Calvert's seal.
Oh, yes. I fly his flag.
Yep.
And it gets stolen.
It's the only one. Like, all the colonies, Massachusetts Bay, Pennsylvania, they're all gone. Everything, all the 13 state seals, the originals, they're all gone except four. That's it.
Yeah.
There's only two handfuls of seals surviving from state and the first U.S. government. They're all gone.
Now, a lot of things that I did in reading all of your material and some of other individuals that you asked me to look at, I kept running across old mysteries that, you know, History Channel has really spread itself pretty thin over a period of the last decade or so. But every now and then they do touch on things that I'm terribly interested in but don't necessarily agree with how they handle them. But I know that our listeners have seen that special on Oak Island.
Mm-hmm.
What could you tell us what you know about Oak Island and what kind of alleged treasure might be there?
Well, I'll tell you this right now. With these families that were there that have come and gone, and it was controlled by Scottish families that were all Jacobites. Same with Robert Scott. He's a Jacobite. Oh, Lord Calvert. He was a Jacobite. Okay?
Right.
He really was. So the island there itself has this mystery of this ancient treasure, and it's supposed to be holy relics being delivered there, vast wealth of the Knights Templars that they brought over in their money, supposedly is supposed to be there. And, you know, I really think if there ever was people that had come over, it could have been a staging ground. It was always documented to these families. There's a lot of, there's some stone art that's Coptic there, and it's being misinterpreted. The show that they're doing right now, they just scratch the surface, but they don't even follow the genealogy. The key is to seeing the vast genealogy associated to a lot of this history. Mm-hmm. And it's just not being really told. And, you know, they're doing these digs. Some Spanish coins have been found. Some lots of rocks have been found that have been cut with one of these ancient symbols, Coptic crosses and stars. And there's one that's a big giant boulder that's supposed to be a head. It looks like a head that's on the Kirkwall scroll. But I just can't get the images to tell if it's true or not. You know, it's what you see on the scroll, and it's what you see on this big boulder. And this big boulder's in the center of what's supposed to be a formation of a giant cross. And so, but I just think that if ever they actually did go there, it was just a staging ground for their exploits. And then later on through Nova Scotia and Canada, you have the Jacobites that are with the Hudson Bay Company controlling that, coming in from the French side of Canada. And their control of resources and lands and everything else like that. So it was continuous. But you don't really hear about that these families were continuously involved in that work. And what was this, exiled royalists?
Sometimes, you know, the treasure may not necessarily be physical.
Information.
It could
I think
be
that's in, what...
Yeah.
what is more there that they're going to find.
I agree with you, and I think...
There's just no way if they brought super holy relics that they would allow them to be stuck in a hole that's filled with water. They just would never do it.
Yeah, but the idea of buried treasure is pretty exciting. And then you and others have talked a lot about Bacon... Bacon's vault treasure. And now, the reason why I got into this back in 69 or so was because of a guy by the name of Manly Palmer Hall and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost had her come and speak at a school that I founded 30-some years ago, and I'm glad we didn't have her. I'm very interested in anything dealing with Nathaniel Bacon or Francis Bacon and the treasure and that kind of thing. But again, when they started digging up, that was in Virginia, right? In Bruton Parish?
Yep, Bruton Parish. And that connects the Washington family back to Bruton Parish in England. That's what my friend Bradbury Court Lindahl and I have been working on. And that could be seen on his blog. He has Bacon's vault there, and he has the Kirkwall scroll. It's on his links there. And it's an amazing story because this relates and links the whole entire history of the Declaration Code associated with the Beale treasure. Now, remember, Robert Scott's married to a Beale. The Beale origin name connects to families out of the West Indies and to Virginia and to Maryland. And these Beales are... what is now being seen as a direct bloodline to the Anjou kings of England, which are the same bloodlines that are the kings of Jerusalem. And so there's these lines of families. Truxton Beale is the key to the mystery with the Bruton Parish Church and the whole vault. And what we've learned is that studying the genealogy, we were able to better understand this whole mystery. And so what you have is that there was this story with a man who went out and with a group of people and went out west and found a whole bunch of gold and treasure and silver, brought it back to Virginia and supposedly buried this treasure and had a cipher code. And this cipher code that still cannot be deciphered by even the best CIA cryptologists on the planet. It's funny because... no one could figure it out, and then here I am linking all this history at Robert Scott and these exact families that are all related and married to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And here's Robert Scott that I know when they did the printing copies of the Declaration or the Constitution, and you see the, if you look at some of these documents, you'll see that they were pressed. And this is common. I found many documents where he takes engraved steel plates and they press them with all that art and symbolism that I told you about.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of that can be recognized as being anti-counterfeiting devices too.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's some, you know, whatever the ancient symbolism is or meaning that's with it, which, you know, there's a lot. I mean, it's there. So the whole thing with this Beale treasure is that no one could ever figure out where this treasure was left. It was supposedly left and buried in Virginia, and that the Declaration of Independence was supposed to be used as, you know, the code, the key code for the cipher that was left at this place this man Beale stayed. No one could ever figure out who he was, but we figured out that these Beales, without a question of a doubt, are related to Truxton Beale. And he's buried there too at the Bruton Parish, and these families are also involved with their exploits and connected to the families in the 1800s that are going all the way out to California and looking for resources as well and the establishment of the United States. One of the Beales was the guy that was involved in introducing camels into the U.S. Army.
Oh,
yeah. And, Yeah, he really was. I mean, they were out there. What were they looking for, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess that was what you wanted to, if you had to do any exploring in the Sahara, I guess you better have a camel.
Yeah, it was the idea. So really, these codes that were in this that were never deciphered, if anyone was ever going to write anything, and if there really was a code truly written in association, it was my belief that it's a possibility that Robert Scott's wife was Eunice Beale, or niece Eunice Beale, but we just can't figure out who her direct family is, and I'm certain it's related to this family that were these high-ranking Knights of Malta. So a lot of these Jacobites and families became, you know, flowed through into becoming Knights of Malta and their association. Down the road, the Knights of St. John and all that.
We're up to our last break here on 21st Century Radio. And when we come back, let's talk about the origin of the American flag. This is one of 4,000 things that my friend Gary has taught me in the last, how many years have we known each other? Four? Since 2010?
4 years now. Boy,
yeah, four or five, something like that. We'll be back with that because it sure did shock me. And I'm not easily shocked. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hi, I'm Michael A. Cremo. I'm author of the book Forbidden Archaeology, and I'm very happy to be on 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. It is a fascinating show, intellectually groundbreaking, presenting alternative points of view on all areas of science and popular culture.
Well, I got to thank you, Michael Cremo. There must be at least a half a dozen films. Michael Cremo has taken about at least a half a dozen of our radio programs and posted them in films. And I'm being told that that's not exactly correct. Oh, he's the co-author. Yes. Did you hear that, friends? No, you didn't. She said it was Richard Thompson's and Michael Cremo. So it's two guys there. There used to be a store called Two Guys. Anyway, well, one of the things that really always excites me about Gary is he's always introducing me to many things that I never thought, or that I thought that were already resolved, such as the theory dealing with the American flag. Tell us what you know about this, please.
Well, I've been an authority on the Stars and Stripes farther, and I'm the foremost authoritarian on the Stars and Stripes in the United States. I'm the only person to ever find Stars and Stripes and prove them authentic to the period of the American Revolution. And before me, no one has ever proven a Stars and Stripes authentic to their revolution. And now, Bob, you remember when they had the original the flag act where they did the description of the flag and it says Field of Stars?
Field of Stars, yes. Mm-hmm.
That origin is in representation to Santiago de Compostela, which means St. James, Field of Stars. King James the First, the Stuart, was named after this namesake, and so is Jamestown. Mm-hmm. The Sinclairs were Knights of Santiago, okay? Lord Douglas, I was telling you about Lord Douglas?
Yes, that's the guy.
Lord Douglas was at the Battle of Teba. He is married. The Sinclairs are maternal grandkids early on with the family of Sinclairs. And he was at a battle with two of the Sinclairs, William and John. They were also Knights of Santiago. And they were carrying the heart of Robert the Bruce. He was going to be buried at Temple Mount. They were going to take him to Jerusalem. But on the way to Spain, where this cathedral is, it's a cathedral that is just magnificent with this history associated. So you have these family members well associated to these people. So this is the whole links of Christopher Columbus, too, this whole Spanish direct link. And St. James, where St. James is buried, you know, the apostle, supposedly, right?
Right.
And at this cathedral with this history. And this is where it really associates the whole history of these Jacobites and where the origin of the Field of Stars. And the Field of Stars first being used in a coat of arms was with Douglas, and he used it on a flag on the battlefield that's documented at the Battle of Teba. And this is where he was killed. The two Sinclairs were killed. And what people don't know is that this William Sinclair, who was the real hereditary Lord of Roslyn, was he the one that has the crypt that's at Roslyn Chapel? No one knows. They don't know. No one even knows where the bodies are. Same with Douglas. People have looked for his body after he was killed on the battlefield and brought back. Mm-hmm. And they haven't. But the symbolism links through this history of Santiago de Compostela. And again, these families were knighted knights. And even President Adams traveled to this to the Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James backwards in Paris, when he was a minister to France, right? Mm-hmm. Which links this whole history with their studies and research and tying in this whole history to the Battle of Teba and this heart of Robert the Bruce. So this whole history with the origins, and when John Adams documented that being on the flag committee with Field of Stars, this is what he's talking about. And this is where the origins come. And so when we see all these different star patterns and designs later on down the road, it was up to people's choice. And, you know, we see George Washington as a circle, then there's a circle with one, then a circle with two, which we don't know who that circle of two is, but the circle of three is documented to Shaw. And Shaw of New London, the Navy agent, who was a descendant of this high-ranking Freemasonic, the cupbearers, and that's a special title that goes back, and where they're the cupbearers to the king. And that went all the way back to this family being to their true ancient kings before the Stuarts or Norman bloodlines became kings in Scotland. So the whole history originates from here, and it's pretty spectacular. It really is. And here now we do see that Robert Scott was making flags. And there's a whole bunch that appear that he may have done. Washington's flag that's in Philadelphia. Excuse me. He did General Schuyler's. I've documented that one with the support of the curator, who was just spectacular with National Park Service. If any one branch of the United States government, I adore National Park Service. They are the best. And they do a lot, and do not get a lot of credit and the support that they deserve nationally, I believe personally, especially with all of our parks. But then again, they have parks and museums. So That flag was really special because Scott has his maker's marks in it. We've proven that he had done General St. Clair's flag, which is the first U.S. Army flag, which showing the eagle. And then when you see the bird's broad wings on there, we wind up seeing this worm or the snake, which is this ancient symbolism of this royal history of these families that we see dating back all the way to these ancient kings of that Shaw line, going back to those ancient kings of Scotland, Alba and Iona. And it's a symbolism that they use with the early Christian history with the cross, the T for the Tau and the S of the serpent symbolism. It's what you see in the royal crowns in the art. So it's amazing how far it's advanced. And I'll be honest with you again, in the flag world today, when you deal with the top academics and they try to talk to me, it's the same thing. I'm shut out with these guys. And it's not about negative attitude. I'll tell you one thing. There are people that just don't want this history being retold.
That's correct.
And that's the truth.
Yes, that's true. That is
true. They just don't want it being told.
And even, there are other areas, because I've had this personal experience dozens of times with the various shows that I've done that I can't control, with the History Channel or Discovery or whatever. You have no way at all of determining what's going to be up there on the, you know, on the screen, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most difficult things about that whole experience, is doing a show and then not seeing it for nine months later, which is a long time. And
yeah.
By then you've already discovered other things.
Yeah.
But you couldn't even get that little material in there because they never heard of it, or they were not in favor of that theory, and that just didn't get into it. So, but anyway.
And what does it do? It winds up killing history down the road. You wind up losing important history.
Well, killing history in a lots of senses, especially killing history from the standpoint of people think they really know about something and they don't know anything at all about it.
Yeah.
Because the people always represent themselves, their guests is the authority, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I was so excited yesterday when you told me about James Douglas, or Lord of Douglas,
mm-hmm.
And the arms of that we're talking about of his has show three stars on top of white stars on a blue field. And that's on a shield. It's on a shield shape. Now, the thing that I was excited about especially was there is some kind of an illustration that I'm looking at right now on the bottom of James Douglas's page, in which you see a group of knights. And you see him with, the three stars in the blue field, etc. And I was looking for the stripes. And I couldn't find any stripes in there, because you mentioned to me that it would be the stars and the stripes. But you mentioned in your writings that those stripes would be found in the British Union Jack.
Oh, yeah. The British East and West Indies flags is where they were first being used. And these families controlled, remember, what if you're the Sinclairs, who are the head of the, as the Grand Masters, they're also ahead of the guilds. That means they also controlled shipwright guilds. Mm-hmm. And the early Sinclairs were the first lords of the high admiralty, the heads of the Navy and the admiralty. And that's where all laws originate, and that's for our courthouses today. It comes a law. So not only do we have that history, we have the laws coming from these people, the origin of it.
Well,
it's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And what's also amazing to me is that all this research that I've been reviewing of yours, et cetera, over the past 3-4 years, you're always evolving. You're always working on something that all of a sudden just pops up real quick. Anything now that you'd like to share, because we've only got about two and a half minutes, anything that you would like to share with from your own perspective of what's the most important thing that you're researching right now?
Well, the big one that I'm waiting on is the study of the one flag that's at the Grand Lodge in Pennsylvania, and I put in requests to them, and maybe they're just trying to figure out who I am. And I had a help of a master mason out of Pennsylvania who knows me well, inviting me to do a talk at their lodge next month. And he gave me a reference to them because I'm a stranger. They don't know me. And there's the most important evidence aside of the matching up all the other great seals with the William & Mary College seals that Scott's documented doing that shows all the rings, the border work, and all the other stuff that already proves he made them. But this, the very first one that's the most special one, is that he did the coat of arms for this book called it's the Constitution of Freemasonry book. That's what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sermon book and it has all their laws in it. And Scott did the arms for the Freemasonry arms. And he did the stonemason's arms. And in the arms, you see the eagle in the quarter, the bottom right quarter of the shield. And when you look at it, and you see the head, and you see this hook on the bottom foot. He didn't do it as a foot. He did it as a weird hook. It looks like a coat hanger hook.
Yeah.
And you match it up to the original very first great seal impression of George Washington, and you see the head. It's the first time we find the most flawless, perfect match ever seen of Scott's work in the Great Seal that's documented. It's indisputable.
And it's indisputable now that we have to stop. We're out of time, Brother Gary.
Hey, real quick. They got the original copper plate, and that's how rare it is because all those seals and relics that are missing, they have a national treasure there.
They have the real copper plate that did that? That's fantastic. Thank you for joining us, Brother Gary. You'll be joining us again in the future. We'll see you next week on 21st. Actually, Zahara will be seeing you next week on 21st Century Radio.
You gotta spread the word. Tell them what you heard.
Stay connected with stimulating talk and breaking news on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Bill Vitka. What is new at the mall?